Though it's the objective of the subzone, limited, is to limit uses where natural conditions suggest constraints on human activities. And that the subzone shall encompass, item two, lands which have a general slope of 40% or more. The parcel in question, as you will see in staff exhibits, have slopes between 40 and 70%. Our office finds that this is so clearly a parcel that belongs in the limited subzone that we do not understand the point of pursuing rulemaking on a rule that seems to be, you know, on its face, not compliant with the actual definition of what a limited subzone is. Per the applicant's proposal, their reasoning, and I'll read this to you, a reason for request, quote, a single family residence is not allowed in the limited subzone, except in a flood zone or coastal high hazard area defined by the boundaries of the flood insurance rate maps. Reclassification to the general subzone would render the property eligible for an application to construct a single family residence, end quote. And they go on to mention that a residence would require additional permitting. We have a secondary concern beyond that this is a parcel that is covered in steep slopes on our reclassifying land in the conservation district for the express purpose of opening it up to development. Based on those two reasons, we believe this is an easy decision. We do not see the purpose in moving forward to rulemaking, and we request that you deny the petition. Thank you.
Okay, why don't we go ahead and hear from the petitioner.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Chair Case and board members. Greg Kugel on behalf of the petitioner. And also, I believe on the line will be Scott Easer with HHF Planners, and also Tim Blackwood of Poly Consulting on the Geotech report. I'm just going to make a very few comments, and I'll turn it over to Scott and then to Tim. Mrs. Longfield is seeking to change a rule change the subzone of this 2-acre Lanikai parcel from limited to general. And such a change would allow Mrs. Longfield to prepare an environmental assessment and a conservation district use application for a single family dwelling. At that point, the land board would then be able to determine where and how a dwelling could be built and reasonable conditions to mitigate that project. I'm gonna spend a few minutes giving you the history of the property, then Scott of HHF Planners will explain the subzone change application. And finally, Tim Blackwood of Poly Consulting will provide an explanation of the geological hazard evaluation report that accompanied the application. The background is short. The Longfields acquired this property in 1981. The property has twice been approved by the land board for a CDUA permit for a single family dwelling. In September of 1981, the land board approved a CDUA for a single family dwelling on the property. That CDUA permit expired. In 1983, the land board again issued a CDUP for a single family dwelling on the property. In August of 1984, the land board approved construction plans for the extension of Kehaulani Drive over the driveway lot leading to the property. However, before the Longfields could construct the driveway and the dwelling, Honolulu City Council passed a building and grading permit moratorium in Lanikai, which stalled the project for several years. Eventually, the land board declined to issue an extension on the permit and it expired. This history is important because it demonstrates not only that development of a single family residence on the property is possible, but it also demonstrates that the land board has twice authorized it. Furthermore, the surrounding properties to the north, which is Ko'oho'o Drive, to the east, which is Alapapa Drive and Mokulea Drive, and to the south, which is Kehalani Drive, are all developed with single-family dwellings. Much of Lanikai's hillsides are developed with residences that are at higher elevations than this property, including on Ko'oho'o Drive. And many of the single-family dwellings on Ko'oho'o Drive have similar slopes to this property, yet they have been developed with single-family homes. I just want to mention one or two legal things before turning it over to Scott. The United States Supreme Court has repeatedly said that a property owner is allowed to make economically viable use of his or her land. The staff report suggests, I would note first that you heard from staff the feeling that this land should be undeveloped. That just runs counter to what the United States Constitution says. The staff report suggests that there are discretionary land uses available in both the protective and the limited subzones that Mrs. Longfield could apply for if she's not allowed to build a house. With all due respect, none of the identified land uses are economically viable on this 2-acre parcel. And I would mention the only four that perhaps could ever apply: renewable energy power generation. That's not viable on a 2-acre parcel, neither for a solar farm or for wind generation. It's not practical. Telecommunications facility is not viable. There are existing cell phone towers in Lanikai on Kaiva Ridge, which is above the property, that serve the area. Agriculture is available. There are no viable agricultural uses on a 2-acre parcel with poor soil, no irrigation, and limited access. And finally, a wilderness camp. Again, overnight tent camping, portable restrooms, and meeting facilities are not viable on this 2-acre parcel that has no street or off-site parking and limited access and an already crowded Lanikai situation. In short, none of the other identified land uses available in either the protective or limited subzones would allow Mrs. Longfield to make economically viable use of the property. And so that is the reason for this application. And I will turn it over to Mr. Easer to talk about the application itself. And Scott, go ahead. Thank you.
I'll be available for questions. When did the current owner purchase the property?
1981.
The current owner?
Yes, this is Mrs. Longfield. Mr. and Mrs. Longfield purchased the property in 1981. Mr. Longfield passed away a few years ago.
Thanks, Greg. Aloha, Chair Case and members of the board. Before I get started, I just would like to ask a general question as to whether or not the board members received a copy of the application from staff that we submitted for this request. I know it was mentioned, it's posted on the department website, but I just was curious as to whether the board members received our request and full application.
I don't think it was sent to us. Am I wrong, Michael?
No, it was not, my apologies, included as an exhibit. Once we realized we were on our deadline, we were in the field when we put it together.
Okay, thanks, Mike. I just want to briefly touch on some issues.
But let's just make sure it's distributed right now, or at least the link.
Okay, I can read the link again, or I can put it in chat. What would be easiest?
Oh, you can put it in the chat. Go ahead. You can put it in the chat.
Can you send it to me?
I'll send it to Darlene. Email it to them. All right, perfect. I'll do that as we speak.
Okay, let me know when you'd like me to proceed.
Okay, Darlene, I just sent it to you.
Okay.
Okay, just a minute. I just want to make sure. Everyone has it.
While we're waiting, Chair, if I can ask Michael Kane, can you confirm that a CDUP was issued on that property?
I can. I'm looking for the dates as we speak. I had them in front of me.
Okay, thank you. No, I don't need the details. I just wanted to confirm that a CDUP was CDUA was received and a CDUP was
right. It was approved and then expired as it wasn't built within the construction deadlines.
And there were actually two CDUPs that were approved, as Greg had mentioned. The first was in 1981. The second was in 1983, and the 83 permit expired due to a number of different circumstances. Primarily associated with the city council, the city and county of Honolulu passing a moratorium on building permit and grading permits specifically for Lanikai. And because of the time limits embedded in the 1983 CDUA, the landowner was unable to perform on the time extensions. And when going back to the board and requesting an additional extension, it was there was no favorable action from the board around 83 or 84.
Thank you very much. Michael, another question. 1981, 1983 is a long time ago now, and there have been changes to regulations with regard to hazards and slopes and inundation zones and cliffs and cliff conditions. Do you think that a CDUA, CDUP application made today would be granted?
A CDUA, an application for a single family residence in the limited subzone would be returned to the applicant without us cashing the check. It is not an identified land use in the limited subzone. Pursuant to the current conservation district rules.
You would think that those rules had changed between 1983 and the present?
Yes, they have. And I'm looking for the dates, if that's relevant.
I see. It is relevant, because if it is not allowable under today's rules, then it's just not allowable. It might have been allowable in 1983 or 1981, but there were a lot of things that were allowable in 1981 that are not allowed at all today under the current rules.
We went through rule changes in 1994 and 2010. So the rules have been amended twice since that first set of applications.
Okay, everybody has the actual petition.
Okay, thank you. No. And just so the board is aware, we are certainly cognizant of the rule changes that have occurred to the conservation district over the course of those two time periods. And you know, that's pretty much the reason we're here today. Where the landowner really would like to make some use of the property. It's been in their ownership for 40 years, and they are unable to make use of the property with the current subzone designation, hence the request for the general subzone. Now, we're also certainly aware of the limitation within the guidance provided for what the distinction between limited and general. And I think the primary distinction we all need to pay attention to is the language regarding the 40% slope limitation. Now, you know, there's no question that a majority of the property exceeds 40% slope. There are a couple of areas on the property that are 20% or less close. One is close to the end of the street that provides access to the property, Ke Haolani Drive. Other elements of our submittal, we did a rockfall hazard assessment, and Mr. Blackwood will be giving you a little bit more information on that following my remarks. We did a flora fauna study. The land had been previously cleared by SHPDE with no cultural or historic sites located on the property. And those are all investigations we undertook to support this request. And really, again, we're separating this request from any request for a dwelling, which would of necessity come further down the line. So with the exception of the slope characteristics, the property in our estimation presents itself with many of the characteristics that would otherwise qualify it to be located in the general subzone. We believe that if the property were redesignated to the general subzone, it could be done with some very strict limitations on where any residential development could occur, leaving the rest of the property in open space in perpetuity. The staff report also pointed out that they had some issues on possible development because of clay soils. I'd like to point out that many of the properties in the vicinity of the subject property have similar clay soils, yet they have all been developed for single family purposes. And Mr. Blackwood will further elucidate on that in his remarks. I think that pretty much covers the content of the application, the purpose for the request, and why we feel or we're asking or we're hoping for favorable consideration from the board. We can move on to Mr. Blackwood, or if you want to ask me any questions at this point, that's fine too.
I have another question maybe of Mr. Kugel. Did the Longfields own any property adjacent to this?
Sorry, I was on mute. I believe they own the driveway lot that connects from Ke Haolani to the 2-acre parcel. I believe that there was a time in history that they owned or had some interest in some of the other smaller parcels located on this Ke Haolani extension area. My understanding is they do not anymore, other than the driveway lot and the 2-acre parcel.
Did they subdivide any lots?
No. I believe it's all in conservation, and I think they would have had to come through you to subdivide. I think these were all pre-existing lots.
Did they live there?
No, there's no house on the property. Never has been.
No, in Lonnie Pine.
That I am not sure. I know that Mrs. Longfield no longer lives in Hawaii. I believe they did live in Hawaii. I'm not sure if it was in Lanikai.
Thank you.
Okay, Tim, if you could provide some background on what you found as far as your rockfall hazard investigation and address some of the issues related to the soils?
Thanks, Scott. I'd be happy to. Good afternoon, Chair Case and members of the board. My name is Tim Blackwood. Just to give you a little background on myself, my degree is in geology and geotechnical engineering. I've been practicing about 30 years in the field and have worked about 20 years in Hawaii. I'm licensed as a PE in Hawaii and as a geotech engineer and geologist in other states because Hawaii doesn't have that licensure. I'm specialized in geologic hazards. I've done a lot of rockfall work in Hawaii, including for quite a bit for Kamehameha Schools and then also for DLNR, actually. In fact, I've got an active project now, a co-road on Kauai that we're under construction for DLNR. So I have quite a bit of experience in rockfall hazards in particular. So for this project, I was asked to take a look at geologic hazards at the site and how development might affect them and how the site hazards could affect development, a pretty common thing that I do. I went out and did a 2 days of reconnaissance. It's very brushy, a lot I can tell you from firsthand experience. So I was able to work my way through a lot of the brush and get up upslope. Poly there, kind of below the pillboxes, take a look around. Took a look at, there's a nearby site that you're probably familiar with. I didn't design it, but I do a fair amount of work with High-Tech Rockfall and talk to them a little bit about the project next door that was put in to protect some homes there in Lanikai, a fence that was put up. So I took a look at that, looked at what other kind of hazards were around there. Measured up some cross sections at the site. We like to get out at the site and actually look at the soil conditions, look at the rock conditions. We collect some information, kind of put that into our rockfall model. And then we analyze rockfall delivery and whether or not we need to do any kind of mitigation for rockfall. I looked at other types of things, soil, that kind of stuff. And I put together a report that's included in the application there that you can take a look at. It's pretty long, my apologies, but it's got quite a bit of information in it. But kind of the three things I think that the staff report touches on that I can speak to are the slope gradients there, the rockfall hazard, and then the expansive soils. Those were three things that were mentioned in the staff report. And as Scott said, there certainly is a majority of the parcel is 70% or 40% or greater. But there are definitely areas in there that are less than that. And you can see that in one of the figures in the staff report. It's got a slope classification map, and that shows some areas that are less slope than that. So there are some areas that are 40% or less than 40%, but definitely the majority of it is over that. The rockfall hazard, the kind of, I guess ironic thing about it is actually if the lot were developed, I recommended that they put a rockfall fence in areas of the site, and the rockfall fence would actually decrease the hazard to homes down slope. It would actually be a benefit to those below where the rockfall fence is put in. And so we would, I guess, require that, so to speak, that be put in. It would be on Longfield's property at the bottom some outcrops that are there that could generate rockfall. And doing that would actually reduce the hazard to downslope residences. And then other than that, the slope where the house would be constructed, there really aren't any kind of significant hazards that would come from those slopes. So we do excavation and construction on slopes of those gradients all the time. In fact, there are a couple of new homes out there being constructed that are on similar slopes to that. So that certainly takes care to do that, but it's not uncommon, and typical practices could be used to address any of those kinds of hazards. And then the final one, the expansive soils, there's really not a lot of expansive soils out there. There are in some areas, but in some areas actually it's pretty thin soils and there's actually rock outcropping on the surface. We pay real close attention to that because that really affects our rockfall modeling. If a rock falls onto a hard rock surface, it can bounce pretty high, maintain a lot of its energy, and go far down slope, affecting residences below. Whereas if we have soft, deep soils, it tends to, you know, slow down the rocks, reduce the bounce height, then reduce the risk down slope. So we look really closely at that. And there definitely are areas with expansive soils on there, but there's quite a bit of that ground doesn't have that. And building expansive soils, actually, we do all the time. It certainly adds an expense to it, but common practice we do is to excavate those soils out from beneath footings, put in some non-expansive fill, and then build on top of the standard spread footings. If that's not an option, we can also put in like small diameter piles to support a house. That's more common for retrofitting houses that were built on expansive soils and not properly constructed. But for new homes, it's usually less expensive to just excavate 2 to 4 feet deep, remove those expansive soils, put in some crushed rock or non-expansive fill, and just build on them. And that does a great job of mitigating those kinds of hazards. So that, as the staff report said, those soils are certainly there, probably not to the extent that it shows on the mapping, and they are easily dealt with common construction practices. So other than that, I would be happy to entertain any questions on kind of the geotechnical parts of this project.
Tim, I just want to clarify that the rockfall hazard exists currently that's there and is not related to any further use of the property, that with or without a single family dwelling on the whole, rockfall hazard exists.
Correct. Yeah, there is a hazard there, present now, and the construction of a home there wouldn't increase that hazard. But if we did put a house in there, we would want to mitigate that hazard for that house, that existing hazard. Yes.
Thank you. I think we're, that concludes. Oh, Greg, did you want to have a finishing comment here?
Well, no, you were going to do it fine, but I guess I would just say for the board, that does conclude our presentation. I had one other comment on in the staff report. It said that it was always an option for this property owner to go before the Land Use Commission and seek a boundary reclassification, presumably to urban, and then to go before the city council, seek a rezoning to residential. And you know, that's not really a requirement. This is the existing zoning, and we're trying to deal with that. And frankly, if this were in the urban and were zoned the way the rest of Wanikai is zoned, there would probably be 20 homes up there rather than one. So we're trying to deal with the situation that we've been given. That's why we're before the board. I think myself, Scott, and Tim are available for questions. And Tim's report was pretty thorough on the soils and rockfall hazards and the issues that were raised by the staff report. So thank you for your time.
So it looks like this property owner also came before the board in 1995 to request basically a revival of the prior permit, which the land board denied.
I'm not sure about that, Chair Case. I've been representing them for about a decade, but that was before my time. I think an appeal. I think that was when this second CDUP had been issued, but then construction was not allowed due to the city council moratorium and some other delays. There was a timing condition, as is in most CDUPs, that required construction to be commenced and completed. And I think there had been some extensions. And then ultimately, the final extension was not granted. And I believe that was in the 1990s. So I'm not sure if that was the land board proceeding that you're referencing.
Okay. So that I'm just reading an article here. The moratorium expired in 1991, and the request to revive the permit was in 1995. The original permit was 1983, was extended twice. Deadline in 1989, then there was a moratorium. That moratorium expired in 1991. And the permit had expired. And so the request came back to extend the permit again, and that was denied.
Sarah, do you have the minutes of that meeting before you? Is that what you're looking at?
No, I just found it's an Environment Hawaii article. I just Googled Longfield and Lanikai, and that's what I came up with.
I see.
This is a 2014 issue.
That sounds correct, based on my understanding.
Okay, board members, any questions, comments? Anybody else want to make any comments? I mean, it seems pretty straightforward to me. We have these very clear limitations, and the classifications are specifically geared to slope. Rockfall is a major rockfall, and slides are a major reason for it. They've been in place for a long time. I don't know if anybody sees a justification for allowing one property to change the rule for one person.
I agree, Chair. So I will move to accept staff recommendation.
All right, is there a second? Mr. Char seconds. All right, further discussion? All right, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? That passes unanimously, so that is declined. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Before I leave, I just would like to give my aloha to Mr. Lemo, who will be appearing before you next, and I want to extend my thanks to Sam for all the years that I've worked with him, and that's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello.
All right, we are moving to item K3.
Is that me?
That's you.
Darlene, can you spotlight him, please, Darlene?
Yes, I will.
Oh no.
Once he starts talking.
Don't do that.
You want to see your face,
Well, can you? Yeah, I can see my face. Not happy about it, but I can see it. Thanks. Thank you, Lambord. I haven't seen you in quite a while, and I'm sincerely sorry for that. But, you know, it's just wanted to say real briefly, you know, it's kind of ironic that I'm sitting here listening to this case, the Longfield case. It was one of the first cases that I was involved with 30 years ago. OCEA back then, and so wow, it's like full circle, huh? Anyway, sorry for the long day. I won't take too much of your time, but I know I haven't been around. I had taken some time off this summer. And in the process of doing that, I had ran into some difficulties on the mainland with some health issues. I was toying with the idea of departing, you know, stepping out the back door even before that. But what happened to me on the mainland sort of precipitated everything. And because of the event that I suffered in August, I was on medical, I have been on medical leave. I'm actually much better today than I was, thank God for that. It was a terrifying experience to have to go through. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. But I will be retiring officially on the 30th. And so on December 31st will be my last day. And I'm sorry. Yeah, give me 1 second here. That'll be my last day with the department. And I've known many of you for so many years. It's really amazing. And in fact, of course, Dr. Gahn, a couple terms and probably some other stuff in between that I can't exactly recall. But, you know, we go back a long ways on some difficult cases. And of course, Chris Ewan and I go way back. And been through some amazing experiences as the administrator, as a staff person, and as an administrator of DLNR. I wanted to reminisce on a couple of cases. One of the reasons I sort of turned out the way I did in terms of working in the department and then managing the department is kind of ironically for something that happened to me back in the early 90s. I think Chris was around for this. It was a case involving, I think, a Carlsberg or a Carl Smith family out in Makena. And just gives you a flavor of how things were back then. I had a certain board member come to me and say, tell me to accept an application for processing. I had wanted to reject it. And I said, fine, I'll do it. And then I did it and I wrote it up and I recommended denial of the permit. And they were not happy with me. I don't know if Chris remembers this. And so went to the land board. I got berated publicly and they overturned my recommendation and authorized the permit. Pat Tummins wrote an 8-page article in Environment Hawaii, sort of providing details of the events of that meeting and that case. Subsequently, someone came to me and said, we don't want the permit to be valid any longer, so the permit was revoked. It was an extraordinary situation, really. And so for me, it was very difficult initially, but at the end of the day, I had done the right thing. I had done what I thought was right and stood my guns. And it doesn't always work out for you, but in this case, you know, it seems like it turned out that I had done the right thing anyway. So, and that kind of like formed my perspective for the rest of my career at DLNR and trying to do the right thing each and every day. Try to be consistent, try to be fair and reasonable, and think about what you're doing. And you have to weigh all of the issues. You have to weigh the environmental issues, you have to weigh the cultural issues. Now, cultural issues are so important. Actually, we're required to consider cultural issues at a higher level than other issues. It's part of the case law, part of the constitution of the state of Hawaii. And we do. That's why we go into detailed analyses of cultural effects. I can go back to Pila'a. Chris remembers Pila'a. Perhaps Sam, you remember Pila'a. You know, we won $8 million in a suit that involved coral damage. We were the first group to go out and do a rapid coral assessment for the state. We put together a team. The case took 10 years, but you know, luckily Zuckerberg came in and purchased the property and they paid us promptly. Bit of a stroke of luck there. Wahila Ridge on Oahu. Maybe Chris was around for that. I don't remember. HECO wanted to put up a 138 kV transmission line over Wahila Ridge, the sleeping giant of Wahila Ridge. wouldn't have liked that very much, nor people that consider it sacred or cultural property. Well, amazing case. We did two EISs, 14 volumes. I stacked them up in my house. They went up to the ceiling. I had to spend a week reading through it. We rejected the first EIS. They came back with another EIS. And you have to understand, this is not electronic. This is, you know, we're cutting trees and producing paper and throwing paper away. It was very nerve-wracking. We ended up accepting the EIS, but the board, the matter ended up getting denied because the acceptance of the EIS, it met all the criteria for what you need to put into an EIS, mitigation, analysis, alternatives, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there were significant environmental effects that could not be mitigated. View planes, impact on cultural property, the sleeping giant of Manoa. It was denied because I felt like we did the right thing. And then we have Mauna Kea. I won't talk about Mauna Kea because there's probably too many sensitive issues surrounding that still. I would like to say, though, you know, thank Michael and for his hard work on that case. We spent a lot of time considering all points of views. And I believe that we came out with our best shot. And it was fair, reasonable, and for us, it was the right thing to do. At the end of the day, who knows what's going to happen? But I know that, you know, we have to play our part. That was our part. And then climate change, of course, I don't need to get into that. And beaches, OCCL, the great staff that we have, we sort of developed a beach conservation program for the state. One had not existed. You know, I think Supreme Court Justice Michael Wilson and Chip Fletcher and myself, and we got together and we wrote COMAP and we started a whole movement, you know, a renaissance in resource management of Hawaiian beaches. And it lives on to this day. We didn't know at that time that sea level rise would be such a major problem for us. It wasn't a big deal back then, but it's become a huge deal. Sea level is accelerating at a rapid rate. And it's going to be very challenging for us to protect the beaches going forward because there's so much exposure now from development, communities, public infrastructure, and it's a huge conflict. My suggestion is to look for areas, look for the low-hanging fruit, look for beaches that are just really valuable and essential resources and entities for us, and do everything you can to protect those to the extent of even considering, you know, offering people. But, you know, it's been a wonderful experience. And so I just want to say that working for the state for 30 years has been one of the most gratifying experience. Well, it is the most gratifying experience of my life. It's like, it is one of the major experiences of my life for the past 30 years. It's been an honor to be a public servant of the state of Hawaii. And an honor to be an employee and a manager at the Department of Land and Natural Resources. Suzanne, you've been wonderful as the chair. You've always held hands with us and tried to help us do, you know, get along and do our thing. Really appreciate that. Chair Char, don't know you that well. Tommy, I don't know if Tommy's still there. We go back, you know, very long time when he was working at Land Division. And I don't know Maui board member too well, but you're all doing God's work, and it's not easy, and you have to make tough decisions day in and day out. And I have had nothing but great experiences with this group. And I just really want to shout out some kudos to my staff as well. You know, Michael, Tiger, Rachel, Sal, Trevor, Charlene, our secretary. I walked in the door at OCCL in 1991. There was Charlene. Charlene and I have worked together for over 30 years now. You know, it's, yeah, really incredible. And Darlene. So, you know, I'm honored and fortunate to have done what I've done. And because of COVID and, you know, sort of things changing so rapidly and the events that took place for me, I just decided that it was a good time for me to take a step back from it and let these younger folks try to get a grip on the reins and let them see how they run this wagon train down the road. And sounds like they're doing a pretty good job so far from what I hear. I hear a lot of good comments coming from not only people in the department, but people outside the department. So that's really good to hear. And yeah, that's about it. I know you're all tired. It's been a long day. I could go on forever talking about crazy cases and all the crazy things we've been into, things we did at Christmas parties that you could never do today. But I got to see, and one of the things I really appreciate, and then I'll wrap it up, is that I got to see almost every nook and cranny of the Hawaiian Islands, you know, from Holehale to the Nanaloa Hotel in Hilo, and every place in between. This job took me everywhere. That alone is priceless. And so I've been very fortunate to be able to do that. And so finally, I just want to thank everybody for supporting us and hanging in there with us when we get into these difficult, you know, conflicts with landowners. That's what we do. We protect conservation lands. We allow reasonable use of conservation lands when it's okay. But, you know, at the end of the day, we have a job to do like anybody. So I appreciate everybody's patience with us. So with that, I bid a fond farewell, aloha, and mahalo.
Oh, sad. Thank you.
It was a long day, Sam, but this was a great way to cap it off, at least for me.
Yeah.
It's great. And I wish I could hear more of those stories.
Thanks, Kaivi.
Yeah, totally agree. Go ahead, Chris.
You've been a great public servant over the years. And I mean, we could talk story forever. And no, if you're ever on the Big Island, give me a call. We'll get together and we'll untangle a lot of this stuff off the record. Yeah. I probably voted with you, your recommendation, like 96% of the time. And a few times I didn't, but I always recommended I always respected what you and your staff came up with. And I have to say, you know, you leave the organization in good hands, you built a new organization, you instilled some values and practices in it. And the one thing you recognized, I think, was that to do your job, you have to have the guts to say no sometimes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha.
In fact, that's how you started, you know. And Sam, I didn't really know you well at all until I came onto the land board. And wondered who this guy was with the same name as me. And I would be looking at him, somebody said, Sam, you're up next. It's like, so, but you know, we're not the only ones that interact with you. And everybody that I've spoken with talking about you, talk about your integrity, your intelligence, your compassion, the high standards that you set and the decisions that you make. I mean, I very quickly learned that your recommendations for the management of our coastal and conservation lands were almost always spot on. I don't know whether or not I've ever disagreed with a decision. I think maybe there were times when we would discuss the details of the matters, but you'll have to remind me when I didn't vote the way that you had recommended. But you know, you really set the stage for all kinds of things. Our planned retreat from the sea, our management of our beaches, the use and stopping of the abuse of our conservation lands. And I will always remember that.
Thank you, Dr. Gahn.
Well, Sam, we have a little something to show you that was forwarded to me by Red Mahan. And he specifically suggested that this would be a good going away present for you from the board. And that is your very own copy of the May 11, 1960 minutes of the Board of Land and Natural Resources. And just some highlights here. The meeting was called to order at 1:45 p.m. And the first comment by the chair is the Department of Land and Natural Resources was created this morning when the governor signed two executive orders, one abolishing the old Public Lands Commission and the other creating the Department of Land and Natural Resources. It's got a list of the divisions, the Hawaii Water Authority, pretty good staff there. It hasn't grown since. Groundwater Resources, State Park System, the Fair Commission, glad we don't have that. The Land Development Authority, the Division of Hydrography. So that's our engineering folks now, for the most part. Bureau of Conveyances. I'm not sure that has grown since either. Well, that's interesting, an IU there. That's it. And entirely missing from this, of course, is the Office of Conservation and Coastal Lands. And that's because it didn't exist, because you invented it. And I mean, so you're on top of all the other things people are saying about you. You were a tremendous pioneer and, you know, a real visionary person, and also the ability to take these really important big concepts and, number one, imagine them, and number two, bring people along with them, and then number three, implement them, bring them into reality. And I will say you are going to be a very tough act to follow, Sam. I hope we find somebody who can lead us into the next generation, whoever that is. You're pretty irreplaceable. And the other thing I think is mentioned a little bit, but just your courage, you know, your courage to take really hard stands. And I mean, you carry a big load. You're not going to know what to do with yourself. You're going to be like floating a little bit because that load is going to be off your shoulders. But it's a really big load. It's tough to make these decisions, and they're among the hardest in the department by a long shot. And really highlighted, emphasized right now by climate change. And so your ability to carry us all into this new world has been just foundational for the Department of Land and Natural Resources. And we all are deeply, deeply appreciative of all that you've done.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And it's the first time in a long time that you said Sam, and I paid attention, because generally you're asked for Dr. Sam Gone. When we're both in the room, it's like, Sam, what?
What?
Sam Gone, it's always Sam Gone.
Chair, when you said irreplaceable, I thought you were going to say irascible.
Well, that too.
Irascible.
Yeah. And Sam, I think it's awesome that the copy that you're getting is in mimeograph purple.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much for those kind words.
All right.
Good luck to you. And I'm really hopeful that we can still keep in touch and get your consultation. But beyond that, your continued friendship as you wander through your retirement.
Thank you, Chair Char. Appreciate that. I'll try to be around. I'll be around.
We'll see you around. All right. Thank you so much, Sam.
Okay.
And thank you, everyone, for a great day.
Aloha.
Aloha. Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays.
See you guys in the new
year.
Happy
holidays, and see you next year.
I got a screen cap before Sam Lemo disappeared. That's awesome.
Good idea.
Hey ho.
Bye, Sam.